Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Heather Boushey, the Executive Director and Chief Economist at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth, and speak about the social impact of the failure to extend unemployment benefits in the budget deal that on December the 28th will cut loose 1.3 million Americans into poverty. We will also look into the political future of the budget deal that is being attacked by lawmakers on both the left and the right as Congress prepares to shut down for the holidays. Then we'll be joined by Henry Giroux, a writer and the current Global Television Network Chair in English and Cultural Studies at McMaster University, and the author of Zombie Politics and Culture in the Age of Casino Capitalism, and America's Educational Deficit and the War on Youth, Reform Beyond Electoral Politics. We will discuss his recent appearance on Bill Moyers, where he discussed zombie politics and the challenges of mobilizing the indentured generation of students into political activism so that they can take back their future. Then finally, with the suspension of aid to the Syrian rebels by the US and the UK following the seizure of Free Syrian Army bases and warehouses full of weapons by Islamists, we will speak with Middle East expert Asher Kaufman. He is a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame and was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace. And we will discuss the latest rebel infighting and recent predictions that this war could go on for a decade. And joining us now is Heather Boushey, who is the Executive Director and Chief Economist at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth and a Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. Her research focuses on economic inequality and public policy, specifically employment, social policy, and family economic well-being, and she testifies before Congress often on economic policy issues. Welcome to Background Briefing, Heather Boushey.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And of course, Heather, the lawmakers on both the left and the right in the Congress are not happy with the budget deal that has just been made, and they are also preparing to leave and shut the Congress down for the holidays. So what is the likelihood in terms of the cutting out the unemployment benefits from this budget deal, meaning that on December the 28th, 1.3 million Americans will be cut loose and face poverty?
Well, it looks as if that is not going to be a part of this deal. I mean, certainly the deal that came down today does not have extending benefits for the long-term unemployed as a part of the package. And it looks like the House and the Senate are going to go home without actually making that happen. Now, certainly there's a lot of folks that are upset about it. I've heard a lot of rumblings about different strategies to at least get the Senate to vote on or to have discussions around extending unemployment insurance benefits, but that's not likely to go through the House right now. I will note that there have been times in the in recent years where Congress has failed to vote to extend long-term unemployment benefits before they expire, but then they have retroactively extended those benefits at a later date. So I don't want to leave the listeners with a sense that this is totally over, but certainly where we stand today, extending benefits to the long-term unemployed is not a part of the package that that is coming down the pipeline.
And how much of a revolt on the right was there against Congressman Paul Ryan, who brokered the deal with Senator Patty Murray? There were rumblings from the Tea Party right in the House that he was something of a traitor.
That he was not taking it far enough, in their view. I mean, certainly this Congress and the Republicans have had a really challenging. The Republican leadership has had a challenging job in front of them. They've got one part of their caucus that is, quite frankly, quite extremist and does not think that negotiation is the way that Democratic politics should work. And so certainly people were frustrated, when Congressman Ryan and Senator Murray started the budget negotiations. They took entitlements off the table, meaning that they decided, you know what, we're not going to talk about the long-term challenges. We're not going to talk about doing anything around Social Security or Medicare. And, you know, there are a lot of folks that really wanted to see some more sort of big cuts over the long term. But those just, they weren't a part of the package because they wanted to get to a deal so that we could avert yet another government shutdown.
But what we're talking about here is $26 billion in terms of the cut in unemployment benefits, which in the overall scheme of things, given the size of the federal budget, is an absolute drop in the bucket. So what is it then about people like Senator Rand Paul, who on Fox on Sunday, quoting him, said, when you allow people to be on unemployment insurance for 99 weeks, you're causing them to become part of the perpetual unemployment group in our economy? Well, number one, he got the numbers wrong. It's actually the maximum is 73 weeks. But I don't understand the logic of saying that you're allowing people somehow to become perpetually unemployed. And in order to help them, you actually have to punish them by taking away their benefits.
It is a very convoluted argument that Rand Paul has put out there. I mean, you know, this is the thing. First of all, 5 years into after the depths of the Great Recession, we still have a share of Americans at work today that is just a few tenths of a percentage point higher than it was in the deepest, darkest days of the Great Recession. Yes, we have created jobs each month. And yes, it's fantastic that we created over 200,000 jobs last month. And yes, the unemployment rate has come down from double digits down to 7%. That's all terrific. But that has been, those gains have basically just sopped up all the new entrants into the U.S. labor market. And basically what we have today is a situation where the share of people at work remains about the same. We've not seen an increase in the actual share of people who have a job because of the increase in the labor force over this time period. I say all this to say that you have this extreme position for people who are out of work. They still are having a very difficult time finding jobs, and we're seeing a lot of evidence that people who are long-term unemployed are being discriminated against as they try to find new jobs. Employers are looking at them and saying, well, why should I hire you? You've been out of work for a long time. I'm going to hire this person who has a job, or this person just lost their job last month. And I think you see a lot of that, especially among younger people. You know, why hire someone who's been out of college for a year and couldn't find a job when you could hire somebody who just graduated last year or this year, you know? So these are real pressing issues. And I think it is, quite frankly, to me, it seems very cruel and vindictive to make the long-term unemployed pay a very high personal price for this budget deal. And it's not just bad for workers and their families, but it's also bad for those communities that have high long-term unemployment. It's bad for the landlords whose unemployed tenant won't be able to pay the rent. It's bad for homeowners that are still struggling with their mortgages. It's bad for local grocery stores and all the like, because those people don't have money to spend it. So it really is, there's not economic evidence that these benefits are keeping people from jobs. The weight of the evidence is that those jobs, quite frankly, are hard to find and there's not enough available. So by cutting these benefits, we're only sort of shooting ourselves in the foot.
So with this 1.3 million people being made jobless on December the 28th, just after Christmas, and many of them, I don't think have anywhere else to go but into poverty, that's not the end of it, is it? There's going to be another 1.9 million thrown off the unemployment rolls in, mid-2014?
Yes. I mean, the people who are thrown off the long-term unemployment rolls will just continue as the months go on. So this is going to be a real problem for millions of American families. And it's not like there's some sort of, you know, magic jobs fairy that's going to show up and just give them a job just because we've cut off their benefits. If that was the way the world worked, it would be a much happier place for many of the unemployed, but that's quite frankly not what is likely to happen. And so, this is going to create real hardship, and it's a real failure of this Congress to deal with it. But again, they still have a chance. They could come back after their holiday, and they could decide that that this is something that they really think is important, and then they want to get on the ball and do it.
So a lot of people on the conservative side consider themselves religious, and I'm curious to know, over this season, which celebrates the birth of Jesus Christ, who many of the people in Congress consider their spiritual leader, from my recollection of what the prophet Jesus said, he mostly ministered to the poor and was mostly concerned about the poor. So is there any possibility
of a religious component being revived here? Because there is this streak of cruelty that's emerged lately, which I don't understand, where lots of Americans had their food stamp benefits taken away. In the case of one of the congressmen in the House who considers himself religious, Stephen Fincher of Tennessee, he's one of the biggest recipients of farm subsidies from the federal government, meaning from the taxpayer, in the state of Tennessee. And yet he went on the floor and quoted the Bible, saying something to the effect that he who does not work doesn't deserve to be fed. I don't understand that kind of cruel theology. It reminds me of what one of the American revolutionaries, Tom Paine, said, that he who believes in a cruel God is a cruel man.
You know, I'm actually very glad that you brought that up. And, you know, I believe it was today. I think if my memory is serving, that Time magazine just made Pope Francis the Person of the Year, in no small part because he has elevated issues around economics and economic inequality as something that we should all be concerned about, but especially, in his case, people of the Catholic faith. You know, it does seem that kind of kicking a person when they're down doesn't seem very consistent with a lot of things that seem good and right in the world. And it does seem as though we are not actually paying enough attention to making sure that the people that live in our communities, our neighbors and our friends, are actually able to support themselves and their families. And it does seem to me that in a country that does, where you have so many politicians where faith does appear to play such an important part of their life, that kind of ethos is not really, we don't hear enough about that in the American political debate.
Well, it would seem, though, that the time for Pope Francis to weigh in on his fellow Catholic, Paul Ryan, was during the negotiations, because one has to assume that Senator Patty Murray at least tried to get the unemployment extended, which was the position of most of the Democrats, right?
Yes, one does have to assume that. I mean, not being in those meetings, you never know, but that would be my presumption. And yes, it does seem like, you know, Pope Francis did, start talking a lot about inequality and economic exclusion, in November. And, you know, those messages certainly seemed loud and clear to me, that making sure that we are remembering the less fortunate, that we're seeing some of the evils around inequality, and that these are, I think, importantly, and I think that one of the things that I found very interesting in the coverage of what the Pope was saying is that these are choices, and quite frankly, these are choices that policymakers in Congress and in the White House are making about that have real effects on people's lives and how people fare in the economy. In no small part determines how they're going to fare in their life. If you deny somebody not only the possibility to get a job because you have an economic recovery that hasn't been weak and that hasn't been strong enough, it's been too weak to create all the jobs for everybody who needs them, then you take away their benefits, then you're taking away people's ability to pay their rent, to put food on the table, to do the things that they want and need to do for their children and their loved ones. So these are very profound, deep and profoundly important moral issues that Congress is talking about when they're talking about budgets.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, Heather Bushy, just a question for an economist, which you are. I believe it's Economics 101 that during a recovery, you try to stimulate, you prime the pump, you don't turn off the tap. And yet here we are turning off the tap on food stamps, which are a multiplier, in my understanding, in the economy. And now we're turning off the tap on unemployment benefits, which also, I assume, is also a multiplier. Where's the economic sense in that?
Well, there is no economic sense in it. I mean, we are at a point in our economic recovery where we've made a lot of progress, but we have not, we are not home yet. We have not finished the job. We've not gotten the employment rate back where it needs to be. And yet we have decided that now's the time where we're going to pare back on spending, and we're going to do it by cutting back benefits and programs that affect the most vulnerable, the least among us. And that is both, that's not very nice, but it's also really bad economics. We know that those programs that target dollars towards people who need it most, those people go out and spend it. That unemployed family that's going to lose their benefits on December 28th, the vast majority of them, they're spending every one of those dollars every week of those their benefits on rent and food and things that they need. That's money going into their community. That does have a stronger multiplier effect than almost any other kind of spending. And so that's exactly what you want to see pumped out into the economy. And we have, I mean, my goodness, I'm sitting here looking at my bookshelf. We have piles of economic evidence that shows that that is the right economic policy. So this is enormously frustrating.
Well, but from your point of view in Washington, as a liberal economist, which I assume is a fair description, what is it about your conservative colleagues? Why don't they get it?
You know, if I could answer that question, I feel like we could really figure out a way to convince them. You know, I mean, I think that one key challenge is that too many folks here in Washington believe this sort of knee-jerk, what I now kind of refer to as a knee-jerk, but I guess that sounds a little denigrating, but they believe this idea that the way that the economy grows is that, you know, you have these job creators that are investors, and so what you need to do to create jobs is to make sure that investors have more money, so you give them tax cuts or other kinds of perks so that they'll go out there and create jobs. And we know from a lot of evidence that that is not the most, that has not been the most effective way to create jobs, and that that is not really the way the economy works. Any economist will tell you that the way the economy works, you have to be attentive to what's going on with demand. Do people have enough cold, hard cash in their pockets to go out and buy the stuff that people produce? You have to be very attentive to the skills and the talents and the way that you can really mobilize your population to be the kinds of workers and entrepreneurs that you need to push your economy forward. These are all very different priorities than a very simplistic model that is focused just on, you know, whether or not investors have enough cash today to invest. And I think too often we get stuck in this very narrow mindset about what's going to make the economy grow. That's not just a failed model, but it's a model that causes us to think, and I think many, mostly folks on the other side of the aisle, but certainly folks on the Democratic side as well, causes them to think that what they need to do to create jobs is to, you know, be tough on the poor or to just give tax cuts to the wealthy. And it's a failed model.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Heather Bushy.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Heather Bushy, who's Executive Director and Chief Economist at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth and a Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. Her research focuses on economic inequality and public policy, specifically employment, social policy, and family economic well-being, and she testifies before Congress often on economic policy issues. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back with Henry Giroux talking about zombie politics and our indentured generation of students.